Hello, everybody. Welcome to Comedy Film Nerds, episode 391.
It's an exciting episode. We got some cool movies to talk about. We're going to be talking about The Foreigner and Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman. But we're also we're going to talk about some comic book stuff, if there's comic book fatigue setting in with all the TV and movies.
Now, why would we talk about that, Chris?
Well, maybe it has something to do with our guest.
What?
Yes. Somebody who knows something about comic book movies, television shows, and comic books, because he's worked on all of them.
He's also a return guest.
Yes.
So let's get right in.
Let's do it. Let's torture him about the Green Lantern movie again.
I think he's sick
right
of
off
it.
The bat. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, Mark Guggenheim.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good to have you.
What have you been working on currently? What's going on?
Well, let's see. Well, we've got, I've been working on Arrow and DC's Legends of Tomorrow on the live-action television space. Mm-hmm. I'm also still writing X-Men Gold, coming out twice a month for Marvel Comics. Trollhunters for DreamWorks Animation and Netflix. And I just sold two pilots to Fox. One is called Classified, about attorneys for the CIA. And the other is a TV adaptation of the James Cameron film True Lies.
Nice.
Wow.
So you were just totally okay with signing on with a project that you know is going to get your phone tapped? When you did the...
By the way, I think that ship has sailed a long time ago. I think they've long since tapped me and long since determined that there's nothing really interesting to...
He's just talking about picking up his kids.
Yeah, it's boring. It's so boring. They're like, oh, we're going to move on to someone more interesting.
Well, cool.
You don't normally hear that. I've sold two pilots to Fox. Normally it's like I've sold one pilot to Fox. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's totally accidental, really, but very fortuitous, and I'm really having a blast with both of them. So
nice.
And those Fox people are nice.
Good, but there you go.
Enjoying working with them.
CW, they let you out of like being able to develop outside CW.
I made a deal. I was at the end of my contract last year on all the shows, and I made a deal that basically allowed me to stretch my legs and you know, try different things in different places. The people at CW are great. The people at Warner Brothers are great. I'm not a very monogamous writer.
Right.
is what I've discovered. My wife's discovered that too. It was nice to be able to, you know, spread my wings and, you know, try out different places.
Now, is there going to be a big crossover again this fall with all the CW shows?
There is. It's going to be a 4-hour event across all four shows, Supergirl, Arrow, Flash, and Legends of Tomorrow. And, we wrap it on Thursday.
Oh, wow.
We wrap on Thursday. But it'll be like kind of like a soft wrap because I think we're going to owe some scenes post-Thursday. But we're in the midst of it. So
you're in the thick of it, though.
We are really in the thick of it. We're in the tall grass. But it's coming together really well. You know, every year it's a challenge. It's a really, really huge challenge. And we make it harder on ourselves each year. Every year we increase the degree of difficulty. And this year it's a massive undertaking. But knock on wood, it's really exciting. I've now had a chance to like sort of see dailies from all four shows, and it's pretty spectacular, I have to say.
That's awesome.
I don't want to overhype it because I never do that.
How did you putting them all together? When did that idea first?
Earlier than usual, I would say. We knew sort of very early on, even as I would say early as like the end of last season, sort of what the emotional turns of the crossover were going to be. And then the actual idea probably came together, you know, quite a few months ago at this point. It's hard to get any – I have no conception of time anymore. It all blends together. You know, Andrew Kreisberg and I each sort of separately had this notion of let's do something that's in the crisis space, which is in crisis on blank, where all these DC crossover, stories that ultimately culminated in Crisis on Infinite Earth. That's the one that everyone sort of knows about. But they've been going on for like 20 years earlier between the Justice Society of America and the Justice League of America.
There's always a crisis somewhere.
There's always a crisis somewhere. And, both Andrew and I sort of independently hit upon this idea of what if we did something with parallel Earths? And we settled upon Earth X, which is the Earth that is, it's actually in the Arrowverse, universe, it's so bad that it doesn't have a designation. That's why it's X, as opposed to the other 52 Earths. And it's overrun by Nazis. And it's kind of
they're always getting in the way.
They are always getting in the way. They really are a pain.
You just can't get rid of them.
I know. You know, I know. It's funny. We had come up with this long before Charlottesville. You know, long before Nazis sort of, you know, unfortunately re-entered the public consciousness. And so it's you know, it's a fun big, you know, comic book come to life. We're not trying to make any sort of political statement. Besides, I don't think, truth be told, it's like, you know, someone asked me, like, well, it sounds very topical. It's like, they're Nazis. Like, there's nothing. I'm sorry. Like, there's a lot of things in our world that we can debate. And, you know, I'm a former attorney. I see facets and nuances in everything. If there's one thing in, you know, in this whole world that is,
we can all agree on.
we clearly can't, but, you know, but objectively that is not up for debate.
Right.
It's Nazis.
Right.
Like, Nazis are bad, period, full stop.
Yes.
So, you know, and yes, unfortunately there are people who, you know, including, you know, the President of the United States, who can debate whether or not, you know, Nazis are very fine people. But this is something that, truth be told, is, I draw the line at any sort of like seeing other sides.
I get it. So we're living on Earth X. I got it.
If there are days when it feels like that. There are days when it feels like that. But anyway, it's really just a big, you know, it's a big comic book come to life. And
wasn't there a whole Marvel series with like Universe X and all of those?
Well, there was the Alex Ross, Jim Kruger, Earth X,
right?
And that's for the attorneys to work out,
right?
That's for the lawyers to work out. DC's got Earth X, Marvel's got Earth X. Mm-hmm. They both have Captain Marvels. I don't know what to tell you.
They'll figure it out.
You know, they will work it out. Something tells me.
So, all right. Let's talk about some movies.
Let's do it.
Let's do The Foreigner.
Yeah. So I liked it.
I liked it too. Yeah. It was a pleasant surprise. I wasn't sure how good it was going to be because, you know, it had all of the setup of like this is going to be kind of a schlocky kind of mess. But, you know, from what Rick was telling us in the spoiler app, there were reshoots. They actually took some care in putting it together. It was a more of a dramatic turn than I thought for both Jackie Chan and Pierce Brosnan. I mean, really, the biggest surprise was that it was more Pierce Brosnan's movie and that Jackie Chan was more supporting. And the fact that it was a drama and there wasn't as much action as I thought there'd
be. Which is the thing. I actually like that about the film.
Yeah.
And I would, just so people know, we did do a spoiler up with Rick Myers. He was thankfully out here on the West Coast. That'll be coming out later this week. But yeah, I like that. Especially the first half of the movie, it's mostly Jackie Chan just dealing with the grief of his daughter dying from the bombing.
And then going into revenge mode.
Yeah, and then going into revenge mode. And so it was really, it was intriguing. And then also Pierce Brosnan playing a former IRA guy who's like a IRA delegate or something within the British government. I'm trying to understand their government a little bit, but that sort of seems like what his role was because he's working with the British government. He's not like still a terrorist or spy. And there's been
but you can't work too closely with him, and then you're a turncoat.
No, then you're a turncoat, right? So it's dealing with the nuances of the actual reality, which is there have been, I think, you know, 19 years of peace between the IRA and
Mark. You were a lawyer. How does it work?
You got me. International law was never my thing. I haven't seen the movie.
So yeah,
but it's really it's a fantastic film and it's worth seeing. I went in with probably fairly low expectations.
Like, so did I actually. I kind of want to see it, but I'm like, well, I'm not getting my hopes up.
I thought it was gonna be like Jack Reacher or something. Yeah, sort of, it'll be fun and some quippy lines or whatever.
Or,
but
I thought it was gonna be more like a Jack, you know, like, all right, we're gonna hit all the Taken beats immediately. That kind of thing, and it didn't.
Really, and really great supporting act. I mean, so you have Pierce Brosnan and Jackie Chan driving the film, but all the support acting, woman who played the British.
You had some nice twists, nice conspiracies, like some cool things in the film for sure. It was better than I thought it would be. Now, I don't know what they did to piss off the Australians, but the film's Australian distributor dumped the local release and only put the pick out in like two cinemas in most major cities.
Really?
So, yeah. So I don't know what happened there. They apparently didn't get behind it in Australia, Martin Campbell's from New Zealand.
Wow. So, that's really bizarre why Australia wouldn't want to get behind it. Because, And I, you know, there's great acting by Jackie Chan, and he's very, you know, understated. It's not big wacky Jackie Chan. It's a lot.
It's not Rumble in the Bronx, Jackie Chan.
No, not at all. It's a lot of fun.
Pass. Yeah. I'm out.
But the great thing is, it's like, you know, Jackie Chan. Let's acknowledge that he's in his 60s, and this movie actually did that.
Right.
Because a lot of movies leading up to that, especially like the last one, Kung Fu Yoga, did not.
No.
We're still pretending he's 30. He isn't.
And
Kung Fu is harder for him now, and that's okay.
Yeah, so this was directed by Martin Campbell, and this is the first feature that he's directed since Green Lantern.
Yes. No, no, that's not true.
Really?
No.
Because IMDb says otherwise.
Well, IMDb is wrong, because after Green Lantern, he did the Mel Gibson movie.
Oh, yeah, IMDb doesn't count Mel Gibson movies.
Oh, okay, so. There you go. Edge of Darkness.
They have them flip-flopped.
Oh.
They have Edge of Darkness in 2010 and Green Lantern in 2011.
Interesting. IMDb. I don't know. Is it possible it got released after Green Lantern?
I
seem to remember, but I've also suppressed a lot of memories related to Green Lantern.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't recall Green Lantern actually like killing Martin's career. Like, I felt he had at least one movie after Green Lantern.
Well, according to this, it's
well,
maybe he shot it. It wouldn't surprise me if he shot Edge of Darkness.
And the release got shifted
after Green Lantern, but Green Lantern was, you know, took longer.
Oh, that could be, actually. Yes, that's totally possible. Yeah. Totally possible.
Well, the good news is this was a well-directed film. It actually was
Martin's
for a drama.
Martin's a phenomenal
and
director. I don't know what happened with Green Lantern. I don't know if he knows.
And it's Vertical Limit, so there's a few.
You know, there's elements of Vertical Limit that are extremely well-directed.
So, and I can't argue with the James Bond movies, though.
No, you really can't.
They were the ones he did were good.
It's funny. It's like it still is heartbreaking for me to watch Casino Royale, because I'll be like, why couldn't we have gotten that Martin Campbell? That was a really good Martin Campbell,
right?
you know, Mask of Zorro, Martin Campbell, you know. But what are you gonna do?
So,
but it was, the thing that did obviously show was the fact that, I mean, it was a reunion of Pierce Brosnan and Martin Campbell. The last time they worked together was GoldenEye in 1995.
Another great Martin Campbell movie.
He directed him really well in this film. Like the thing that surprised me also was that this is the type of movie that's so easy to phone in a performance. Like, this is kind of, we're just going to do exploitation, action, cities, cars blowing up. That's it. That's all. And a script just littered with cliches.
But it didn't happen.
Exactly.
That.
It didn't. It was a drama with action elements to it, which is interesting because, you know, I'm sure the trail editors got instructions of like, no, make this look like a Jackie Chan action movie. And really, that's not what it was. And it was a pleasant surprise.
I wish the trailer editors would have cut together a more dramatic version that showed you, because there's great scenes between Pierce Brosnan and Jackie Chan.
Are you giving notes on the trailer?
Yeah.
You're giving notes on the movie. You're giving notes on the trailer.
I'm giving notes on the, here's why I give notes on the trailer, because if I wasn't doing this podcast, I would have passed on it based on the trailer.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So that's the mistake I think they made.
Well, certainly with respect to Australia, that's true.
Yes.
No, Martin's a phenomenally talented director. I think you know, really is a function of, you know, does he get the underlying material? I think if he gets the underlying material, he's, you know, he nails it. Just totally nails it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was interesting. Rick Myers was saying that it, you know, just the, and I think you may mention this when you were on the show last time. It's just like the studio might have meddled a lot with Green Lantern and put him in a tough position to where he couldn't be.
There was a wide variety of there was a lot of missteps along the way. But look, it is what it is. You know, I've moved past it. I've had a lot of therapy.
So this is
Ryan Reynolds. He's awesome.
He's doing okay. He's doing okay. He's hanging in there.
And so is Martin Campbell, because this movie is really, it showcases his abilities as a director, I thought, quite well.
And also, it's the kind of movie where you're like, you know what? I'd like to see another one. With Martin Campbell directing.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, this is based on a book called The Chinaman. So I don't know. There might be more of these. It might be like Jack Reacher. In terms of they're going to
That'd be funny if there were like 20 books in this series.
Well, the thing that we also got to give credit for is you have two giant stars in this, but then all of the other actors are like English and British and Irish actors that, you know, have done indie films or movies from there that you probably, if you're in America, you probably don't know them. But that's a testament, I think, to a director's ability is in casting.
Oh, absolutely.
And when
you find
all these amazing actors, it's like, wow, who's that? That guy's awesome. And oh, that woman, you know, like they're really solid pieces, acting scenes where these actors are highly showcased, and the directing is real subtle in all of it. So it's definitely worth seeing.
For sure. Now let's get to the next movie, Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman. Now you got to see an advanced screening because it doesn't go wide until actually, I think, this week or possibly.
Well, later. I don't know. I had some kind of. I mean, I don't know why I was working at the Zanies in St. Charles, Illinois, and at the multiplex out there off of whatever Highway 64 I was off of. There it was playing, and I saw it, and I was like, wait, what's this? And I watched the trailer and the description. I was like, well, this sounds fascinating, and it really is. It's a very interesting movie.
What's the listed release date on it?
All right.
So, but one of the things
don't ask IMDb because
they don't know what they're saying. Now, this is based on
it has a release date of October 13th.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not.
Chris, you just don't know how to use your Fandango app.
One of them is lying to me. So one of the things I found interesting about this movie is that it's about the professor who also invented the lie detector and also invented Wonder Woman and the lasso that makes people tell the truth. So clearly life imitates art or art imitates life. So but what was also interesting is this is set up as a biopic mm-hmm. of how he created Wonder Woman. And William Marston's granddaughter, Chrissy Marston, publicly stated that her family completely rejects any claims made in the film and in no way support this work of fiction. So there is a disconnect from what is on the screen and what the family was envisioning.
That's puzzling to me. I mean, I don't know. Well, maybe it's not because what happened. So what is as this movie is. I'll just read you the IMDb description. It's the story of psychologist William Moulton Marston, the polyamorous relationship between his wife and his mistress, the creation of the beloved comic book Wonder Woman, and the controversy the comic generated. So he was living and there's evidence to suggest that this. I think the family. I don't know. Maybe they just have shame. But he was married and then started. He brought this intern into the marriage, and they all started living together, and they had kids together. And of course, back in the 30s, it was like, whoa.
It's almost hard to believe the granddaughter had an issue with this.
Yeah.
I know. So, and he lost his job, and he did all this research. And then in the early, I didn't know this, but in the early issues, so the three of them experimented with, you know, bondage and S&M, and as a psychologist,
they were sex hippies.
They were sure, Chris. They were absolute sex hippies. But his whole thing was like being submissive to women helps understand their power and everything. That's sort of why he wrote Wonder Woman, was like showing this powerful woman. And in the early issues, apparently,
already more insightful than 50 Shades of Grey.
Well, God, in the early issues. You know, there was like bondage and stuff like that. In the comic.
Right.
And then, of course, some, you know, Americans for Decency group. And that was played by Connie Britton or Brighton. He comes under attack and all this stuff. So I thought it was pretty fascinating.
Well, I liked in the trailer when they said, no one is ever going to publish this.
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting considering. You know, Wonder Woman came out last summer and the impact that it had and the, you know, we talked about it on this show of how, you know, it was so cool to see a female superhero depicted this way and she got to do all these amazing things and where it came from and the history of it. And all the performances were pretty decent. The director is Angela Robinson, who, you know, she directed Herbie Fully Loaded. Like she hasn't...
She doesn't have a long page.
Well, it's not, but it's a lot of TV.
Oh, okay.
And she did
Debs. She's a TV director.
And she's a TV director, so.
Oh, she did Debs?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She did True Blood. She did some episodes of The L Word. And
actually, she sounds like she would be the perfect director for this
movie.
Yeah,
she really is. I mean, mm-hmm. It's a fantastic film, I thought. And it's really interesting. I'm so puzzled by the granddaughter. I guess maybe I'm not, but I don't know why the granddaughter would just totally disavow all of this. when there's like photos and historical evidence to back up this relationship between the three of them?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question. Oh, no, I'm dying to see the movie. I've been always, you know, intrigued by this. I always knew sort of this backstory, and I've always
Well, the filmmaker also responded when I kind of asked that question, too, about, and she said, I think there's a lot of facts that are indisputable about the Marstons, and I feel that there's a lot that's open to interpretation. So as a filmmaker, this was my interpretation of their story.
Oh.
So there was clearly some liberties taken with the story, and then there was clearly some stuff she was basing it on, you know, known information.
My guess is the facts are they all three lived together and they had a bunch of children together.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some scenes.
Willy-nilly.
I didn't say that, Chris. That was your interpretation of it.
That is my interpretation of it. They were doing it willy-nilly.
Willy-nilly. So that, I think... But then there's some scenes where they're sort of like dressing up and tying each other up and stuff like that. That's probably mm-hmm. my guess is where the filmmaker took liberties.
And then the granddaughter might not have approved.
Yeah, it's just like any kid doesn't want to imagine their grandparents having sex. I don't know. So
bondage sex.
Some bondage sex. So they're just like, nope, I don't think this happened. Yeah. It's all a lie. Everything's a lie. But it was really interesting. And so let's transition then into the, you know, talking about superhero movies and cape fatigue and stuff like that, Mark. So,
yes,
you know, you said you knew a little bit about the history of this, and then what did you think of the Wonder Woman movie when it came out this summer?
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it. I was glad that they found the fun. I thought Gal Gadot was a revelation.
She was great.
She was fantastic, mm-hmm. and I have to say, like, I didn't get the sense of all of her potential as an actor from Batman versus Superman.
Right,
you know, this felt.
I don't
like,
know
wow.
why you. I don't know why you wouldn't have.
Yeah,
it's so
but
weird.
And I also thought you know, Chris Pine was very good as well.
Yeah,
no, I really
he played
really
a great girlfriend.
He was great.
Yeah,
he was great. You know that. Well, that's the thing. It's like it's not. He played a great supporting character, and it's
yes.
you know it's great that you had a female protagonist who had a male supporting character rather than the, you know, what's become the, you know, terrible cliche of the male, you know,
right.
protagonist and the female support.
Well, character. What was interesting, too, is it was the right movie at the right time.
Yes,
and it really
absolutely.
Was part of the conversation of, like, mm-hmm. Everything from why don't we have female leads to why are all these DC movies horrible? Why? And so now our expectations are lower, and everyone was kind of looking to Wonder Woman and like, well, this one has to be better. It just mm-hmm. has to be. And it was also not directed by Zack Snyder, and it was directed by a woman. So it was Patty Jenkins.
Yeah.
Right? So I think what helped it too in a weird way was the kind of the culture surrounding it, like, because everyone at the same time, it was the dichotomy of lowered expectations and wanting it to be good. So, and it kind
that's
of hit,
a potent, that can be a potent
yeah and it kind of hit right in the middle, like, oh, we got both. We got a good movie, and it kind of it steered the ship a little bit from the DC movies, which is what we really needed.
And Patty Jenkins, I saw this Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman movie on Friday, and then I flew back from Chicago on Sunday, and I watched the Wonder Woman film on the plane again.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that opening battle sequence when the Germans come to the island, I was like, and this is on a little screen behind on the back of a chair. And
right.
I was like,
exactly as the filmmakers intended.
Yeah.
exactly what they wanted to see. I saw the first one, you know, on a giant screen,
right.
and it still was like, wow, Patty Jenkins, man, did she direct action well. Like, she
yeah.
really, and the slow-mo scenes, the women are jumping up, and they're
spectacular.
Oh, the three arrows. And
yep.
Great.
And again, like you said, Mark, Gal Gadot, wow, did they...
By the way, just as a side note, are we going to see Green Arrow do the three-arrow jump from Wonder Woman?
You know, no. It's funny, though. I did watch that. Go, oh, that's interesting. We've done two arrows before.
Right.
You know, maybe one day we'll do three. We'll be able to afford three arrows. It's a feature, so
yes.
they have more money to spend on digital arrows. It's usually like about $3,000 an arrow.
Yeah.
It was cool, though. I mean, after seeing the history of it and then, you know, some of the – and then seeing all of Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman having all of these superpowers that were in the initial
mm-hmm.
Comics that some – they were sort of taken out for a while in the 40s and 50s or something like that.
This is something I'm interested in. Was she originally able to fly when the comic first came out?
Boy, you know, they didn't get into that in this film. Mm-hmm. That's a great piece of trivia.
You know, it's funny. I don't remember. My initial, like exposure to Wonder Woman, apart from like her appearances in the Justice League, were, believe it or not, when Gene Colan was drawing her. And like, this is like the late 70s, very early 80s, I would say. And I think she was flying in that, but she also had the invisible jet, and which begs the question, you know, if you can fly, why?
Why do you have an invisible
jet? Why the invisible jet? Yeah, but, you know, apart from, hey, it's cool. But yeah, that was my exposure. And then I don't have a clear enough memory of like the early issues of Wonder Woman.
Well, let's go into this, though. So where do you think, we've discussed this several times, I want to hear your take on it, is where do you think the Wonder Woman sequel goes?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a really good question. I don't know. I would prefer that it not jump ahead to present day. I think then it would feel too big of a gap. I'd like to see her, you know, handle, you know, some different historical periods. You know, but I don't know. No one's asking my opinion, so you know, I'm just.
Would we go
to
World War II? Would we go like where could we go?
It's funny. It's like, I mean, the end of the first movie, you know, basically suggests like, you know, well, I'm here as a bulwark against, you know, oppression and bad things happening in the world, and anyone who knows history goes, yeah, there's something coming up.
Yeah,
those Germans are not done. So I don't know. I'm very, very excited to sort of see what they have up their sleeves.
For sure,
Aaron.
I don't know if I can handle any more terrible German accents, though. Oh my God,
we want to go for the Führer. That like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Papers, please.
What's the guy's name?
Who played the crazy general?
Yeah.
Well, he's dead, so you're good.
Yeah.
You're good. You, don't worry.
I mean,
it's not coming back.
That just couldn't have been more miscast. I mean, there's so many great German actors, and they got one of the Houstons. Danny Houston?
Yeah, Danny Houston.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's just bizarre.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's a fine actor, but his Ludendorff was a little much.
It would that accent would have worked on this show? Maybe not in a feature film.
9999. So now we were talking about this before. Now we've got the Netflix shows. We've got all the X-Men shows now with even on FX and on Fox now. We've got the CW shows. We've got all of the Marvel movies. We've got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Are we hitting that superhero fatigue now? I don't even want to say comic book fatigue because there's a lot of properties that don't have superheroes in them that are like Walking Dead that are based on comics. But superheroes specifically, are we hitting like a point where this is super saturation?
Well, we have to understand, you know, like I said, we still haven't, you know, wrapped the crossover yet. So
right.
I have total superhero fatigue right now. I know more about fatigue right now than I know about superheroes. Look, I'll be honest. I think that's a question we've been asking. We ask ourselves that every year. I think every time I come on this podcast, we talk about it. To me, that's not the big issue. The truth of the matter is the market will always tell us, you know, whether or not, you know, something is too much. I actually, someone had told me, this may be apocryphal, but someone told me that like one of the major studios did a study of like, you know, teenage and, you know, 10-year-old boys, and they don't even see these comic book movies as comic book movies or superhero movies. They just see them as movies. I think to ask the question of, well, when's the bubble going to burst, or is there a superhero fatigue? I think that almost belies to me what is the greater issue, which is, are we as an industry making enough television shows and movies that are not based on comic books, that are not about superheroes? As far as I'm concerned, you know, I love all the superhero movies. I'm a big fan. I go to see, you know, all of them pretty much. I can't think of the last one I skipped. But at the same time, I love pizza, but I don't want to only eat pizza.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, I want, you know, and yes, they're, you know, with, you know, the William Moulton Mars movie, it's like they're mixing up the pizza. Now they're throwing pineapple on it, which is great, wonderful. Again, but it's still pizza. Mm-hmm. I want to have pizza, but I also want to have a hamburger, and I want to have sushi, and I want to, you know, I want a lot more variety in my movie and television diet.
Right.
You know, so that's what I crave as an audience member.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great question, I think, to ask your, like, I do that a lot. Like, what do I just like as a consumer? And the overall question, do we have superhero fatigue? I would say overall, no, because I'm just, they've always been making comic books. There's always interesting stories coming out of the comic book world. And, you know, if people want to keep adapting them and all of these different formats, you know, Netflix, network.
Cable, and the market will say, like, all right, well, no, this one's
if
no
they,
good.
Yeah, if everyone stops watching the Marvel ones on Netflix, guess what? Netflix will stop making them.
And there's going to be hits and misses. Like, I'm actually enjoying The Gifted. That's the new,
I haven't seen The Gifted
the new mutant show that started on Fox. But what's interesting about it is it's very different from Legion, where Legion is like an adult FX show, whereas The Gifted I can watch with my kids.
Yeah.
So, but it's still mutants in the Marvel Universe.
Right.
And, you know, Inhumans was a bit of a misfire. But, you know, they're not all going to be hits and misses. And what's going to happen, I think, is that they're going to be judged based on whether or not they're good shows or not, not whether or not they have superheroes in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll come down to that. But Mark, you bring up a great point and we talked about this summer because August was a very odd August as far as movies go.
There was these gaps that
was
didn't happen
before. Giant movies were not released in August this year, and I don't remember in August of that
I felt
happening.
Like it was like
that,
all
that's
of a sudden.
I mean, this is a problem. Like, we're not making enough. Basically, it's not that we're making too many superhero movies. It's that we're not making enough movies.
Right.
You know, I think the number of superhero movies that, you know, we've had for the last couple of summers has pretty much remained constant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can now rely upon a movie from DC. We can rely upon, you know, two movies from Marvel.
And they've shifted. Some of them are in the fall now. Yeah. Some of them are in the winter.
But the number of movies really, I don't think, has fundamentally changed over the last, you know, call it 3 years. What has changed is the number of movies that are not superhero movies. Those have declined
sharply.
That's a great point. And that's a huge problem. That's a huge problem. And, you know, to that point, shame on everyone who hasn't gone to see Blade Runner 2049. Shame on them. Because, you know, and look, I recognize it's 3 hours long. You know, you can have fewer screenings. It's a bigger time commitment that you're asking of the audience. But the truth of the matter is that if there are fewer movies being made and more superhero or more superhero movies being made, we as an audience only have ourselves to blame. I mean, the studios, they're not complicated creatures. They make the stuff that will sell tickets.
Right.
Period. Mm-hmm. That's it. Like, so if you want to see, you know, more really intelligent, remarkably well done science fiction movies, for example, go see Blade Runner 2049. If you haven't seen it and you're complaining, I got no time for you.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good point. I think there's a lot of people.
We say before, vote with your dollar.
Yeah,
because I think people aren't spending the effort to find
and then actually vote
the smaller movie. Right. Yeah.
Yes, please.
The smaller movie, even though it's on a Tuesday, well, that no other country does it on a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, separate issue.
Yes.
And no online voting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't want you to vote in this country. Anyway.
The show got so much more political.
Yeah. We throw a couple of sides.
Something happened last November. I forget which. Something happened. I forget. Yeah. But it sort of shifted all of our
thinking.
It's
all right. Everything will be all right.
Yeah, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
But I think that, yes, the movie-going audience needs to go out. I do believe you're right. Like, they need to support the smaller, the movie that isn't a cape film, that's well scripted, you know, like whenever, like, I don't know, just off the top of my head, I'm thinking like Hell or High Water or something like that, or
great movie,
or any of the other, you know, interesting films that have come out that even got some Oscar buzz, even, you know, this Professor Marston film, like, make sure you see that movie because it is it's not a superhero movie at all. I mean, it's tied to it, but it's really a written, well-directed, well-acted film. I will say this, though, or let me ask this question. Is there some culpability with the studios in the sense that when a smaller movie comes out, they don't get behind it as much?
The marketing budgets are different.
The marketing budgets are different, but at the same time, the smaller the production budget, the harder it is to justify more money on the, you know, marketing side. It's complicated.
Unless it's Blair Witch.
You know. How much of that was like a huge marketing campaign? How much of that was just very well marketed?
Well, know? that's actually a good question because it was very stealthily marketed unique way.
But that's the thing.
But then once it was a hit, then all of a sudden all this new marketing money just came pouring in, and then they made a sequel and bankrupted their own studio.
Well, there you go. So happy ending all around.
Yeah.
it's tricky. It's, like I said, studios are very simple creatures, but they're simple creatures operating in an incredibly complicated business.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Look, with all the content that's out there, superhero or not superhero, comic book or not comic book, there's a huge amount of content that's out there overall. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly television is, you know, or non-feature is filling in the gaps for the, you know, the fewer product, the decrease in amount of product that, you know, the film studios have been putting out. Certainly television has picked up that slack. There's a huge amount of clutter to sort through. Just to tell, like, you know, you guys were debating whether or not, you know, the William Marston movie debuted.
Right.
Well, right.
A successful marketing campaign would have eliminated any doubt.
True. Right.
You know, you should know. And you guys are in the business. You guys are doing a podcast about this. If you guys don't know, here's the thing. If you guys don't know whether or not that movie came out, I can guarantee you that Joe America doesn't.
Right. Has no idea about this movie.
And that's a fundamental failure of marketing.
Yep.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah,
it's an interesting point, and I think it's the dilemma, and we've talked about this on the show too. Is you're right, like you say, the studios are just we need big budgets, but I wonder if they have painted themselves into the corner of the sense that they've got the $150 million budget of the giant blockbuster,
even higher now. It's upwards of 200 now.
250 some of them, and then. The under 30 million, like we've talked about this a lot. We're starting to see a little more of them, but we're not seeing a lot of as many.
The mid-range budget films.
The mid-range
those
budget.
Those have gone away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's the territory that television has mostly taken over.
Right. Or the streaming services or whatever.
Certainly like now you look at like what Netflix is doing, and I think Netflix is trying to, you know, make those mid-range movies and release them both theatrically and on their platform. Things could change. It could be, you know, and the other thing that's, you know, changing is, you know, people's technology with which to view movies and television is improving. You know, there's now a 4K Apple TV and all the movies are being made available in 4K for iTunes, you know, and you get the big screen television. Do you really have to go out? You know, do you have to go to the movie? I still love going to the movies. Yeah. That's still like my favorite thing to do on a Saturday night, do dinner and a movie.
Yep.
But it's getting increasingly expensive, and the desire for a communal experience, which is really why I go to the movies, to experience the, you know, movie with a whole group of strangers, quite frankly, you know, maybe that's, you know, seeing diminishing returns. I don't know.
That's interesting.
So, you know, the one thing that's keeping the movie theaters alive are the big tentpole movies because those theaters get packed, like, you know.
That's right.
They're
on three screens.
Right. Every time a Star Wars or a Avengers movie comes out, you know those theaters are going to be packed for weeks.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
That's what I was going to say is as a consumer, that's what I will leave the house for is a big, loud...
Eventized movie.
And, you know, I'm not... Something that I can't watch at home because... At full volume because I you know, I'll disturb my neighbors or whatever, is what I'll go to the theater for. Versus like even a comedy, it's just like unless there's great word of mouth, I'm not.
That's a great point because at home, like Mark was just saying, if it's just let's just take Hell or High Water. Let's just take that movie. Did I need to see it on the big screen?
No.
Probably not.
Mm-mm.
I could watch it at home. I did see it in the big screen, obviously, but if I watch it at home and I got a nice flat screen and a comfortable couch.
It's still effective.
It's very effective.
You got surround sound at home.
Whereas,
granted, you may not have Dolby Atmos where you have the speakers on the ceiling, but that's all right. You can get away with that.
Wonder Woman on a smaller screen, you're losing something.
Mm-hmm.
You're
that's
losing
right.
something.
Mm-hmm. You are.
You know?
Yeah, you are.
And like that's what I've done. I spend the $25 to go see, you know, Doctor Strange in IMAX 3D at the Chinese theater because
and that's money well spent.
Yeah, because it's like such an experience.
That's right.
All right.
So we'll talk about our sponsor. We have a Patreon sponsor, Frightfully Uninformed, a podcast that watches mostly classic horror movies to figure out horror movie fandom. FrightfullyUninformed.com. This is our $50 ad tier that you could participate in.
And you're read on Patreon. Every episode. You get the spoiler app. You have the regular apps. Any bonus apps we do, you get read. So, except the ones that are actually on Patreon.
Take advantage, yes. Yeah. That would be redundant.
We're not going to add you.
So now we were already talking about the trailers and Professor Marston and the Wonder Women. I really liked the trailer. It made me want to see the film. I think it was a well put together trailer. The thing we were talking about before is even with like The Foreigner, like there's no doubt in my mind what Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman is about, what kind of tone it is, what's going to be explored. I'm like, I got it. I'm on board. So there's no tricks in the trailer as far as I could see.
Yeah, and it's accurate. Having seen both, I can tell you
You're not being fooled.
Yeah, you're not being fooled.
And the other trailer we saw was The New Mutants. Now, this I found interesting because it's basically a mutant horror movie set in almost like an asylum, like a hospital, and with all these crazy, creepy, weird things happening that have to do with their powers. So I feel like this feels like a reach for me. Like, I'm like, all right, well, how are we going to do a Marvel property or mutants, but then do it differently than what we've already done? And the answer was horror movie.
Well, I think it goes to what Mark was saying about, you know, we need to, like, this number of superhero movies we're making is remaining the same. We're making less of the other ones. So does this help sort of bridge the gap of all the things that the issues that the film industry is having right now? Because it probably doesn't have a massive budget. It probably wasn't a $100 million movie because I didn't see any huge names in it. It's like younger actors
honestly, this felt like horror movie budget too. It really felt like this is like, we're going to shoot this and treat it like a horror movie. It's just going to happen to have, you know, the Marvel brand on it.
But then does it, because it has the Marvel brand on it, does it get...
I think it's interesting. I think it's a fascinating question. First of all, it's like, I don't know, like, I saw the trailer and I was like, okay, is this like, you know, when I saw like West Side Story recut into be a zombie movie? Like, I mean, I don't know how much this is reflective of the actual film. Mm-hmm. I will say, you know, again, if you're living in a world where the studios are going, listen, the only movies that people are going to see are movies based on comic books, right or wrong, good or bad, that's what our market data, that's what our experience is telling us, then I would applaud a movie like New Mutants, or at least what New Mutants seems to be, which is, okay, fine, we're gonna work, this is a workaround. You know, we found a loophole. You know, if you'll only see superhero movies and we don't want to only make superhero movies, here's a comic book movie that is really a horror film. But and there's a big part of me that actually isn't bothered by that for the following reason. For as long as there have been comic books, there have been comic books that are different genres.
For sure.
Right. Like, I remember, like,
back in... Like, Sandman is a classic horror, we haven't seen that.
Yeah, and, like, Night Force. Preacher, Night Force by DC, or Preacher, or even The Nom that Marvel published in the early 80s.
God, I remember that.
Which was awesome. Like, it was a total war book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess my attitude is, if it takes the Marvel or DC logo in the front of the trailer to get people into the theater, I say... Okay, fine. I'm glad we're mixing it up. I'm glad the studios are changing the types of, you know, the types of movies that they're putting after that logo. Mm-hmm.
So then does it beg the question? Then it's like, we need to do a movie where Glenn Close plays an older woman finding love again, but she's got superpowers. Is that what they just put like
I think it's just a matter of time before you see something. You know, it's all about how much can you change and, you know, reinvent the genre. And, you know, it's...
Well, maybe we'll actually get a real Jonah Hex movie that's an actual Western.
That could be. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean,
because we didn't.
Because I tell you what, from watching the trailer, I think there's, you're onto something here a little bit. Because as we just said, like, as I said, as Aaron said, I'll leave the house for, you know, Wonder Woman on the big screen, but I'm not going to leave it for a smaller indie film or whatever. I'll watch that at home. I'm not a big horror movie guy, But now you tell me it's mutant horror movie. Then I see that Marvel logo. Now maybe I'm going to go see that.
It could work. Because I'm not a big horror movie guy either, but I'm like, I do like the New Mutants. So what do I do? I'm very, I find myself very conflicted.
Now, the New Mutants, they were a book for a while.
A long while.
Yeah, a long while.
And there's been relaunches since. But the original book that was created by Chris Claremont and Bob McLeod, that ran for a good long time.
What were the most popular, like the most famous New Mutants that kind of crossed over a little bit into the consciousness?
Well, there's certainly no answer I can give that's not going to piss people off.
Yeah.
But, I would say...
as someone who writes for the X-Men.
I would say, because everyone, you know, the thing you discover very quickly writing for the X-Men is every character is someone's favorite. I mean, even the most obscure, deepest cut characters is someone's all-time favorite, which is great, you know. And the fact that the whole X-Men universe has so many different characters is its own universe. I mean, it's its own animal, or it could be its own animal.
That's why Fox isn't letting it go.
I cannot speak to what their plans are, but, you know, like, to answer your question, like, I would say, you know, Cannonball, Wolfsbane, Sunspot, those are the three that, like, immediately jump to mind.
Right.
Danny Moonstar, you know, really, quite frankly, the original lineup, you know, the original lineup of the New Mutants, I think, are the ones who have remained the most iconic. And I think a bunch of them are in this movie, so I'm excited.
Right.
I'm,
yeah.
I think Mark's answer to your Fox question shows how he got the gig, how he sold the CIA deal, because he sounds like Martin Sheen in Apocalypse Now when he's having the dinner with all those generals and everything, and he's like, I have no knowledge of that event.
I don't know.
I have to be careful. It's funny. Whenever I go on this podcast, it's always an exercise in avoiding biting any of the many hands that feed me. It's like, ask me about someone I'm not either working for or trying to work for. That's hard. It's hard.
Well, we don't want to jam you up, but it's also like when Joey McIntyre's on the show, we always try to get him to sing.
Yeah.
So, there you go. So you get him to sing and you try to get me to ruin my career.
Yeah,
I get it. Always fun. I enjoy a good challenge.
So you've been navigating pretty well so far.
Thank you. Well, it's my third time on the show. I'm hip to your tricks.
The guard, yeah.
You tried out the Green Lantern. You know, the usual. What do you think of those DC movies? Yeah. Come on.
So let's talk about DVDs and Blu-rays.
Yeah, let's do that. Spider-Man Homecoming.
Spider-Man Homecoming with a rather large appearance of Iron Man in that in that movie. Now
we all talked about it. We love this film.
We loved it.
And this movie I really dig.
We had actually we had talked about it before on this podcast about where you know they're trying desperately to get Spider-Man into the Marvel universe. They were trying very hard. And I said, I'm sure the lawyers are talking right now. And sure enough, months later it's announced that they worked it out, and basically what's happening is Marvel is making the movies for Sony.
Well, so. I have some inside information that I can share.
Please
Basically, Marvel went to Sony and said, do you guys like money?
Right?
It was short a conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you seen our movies?
Yeah. And
Sony
went,
done?
Sure.
We like money.
Yeah. And true to form, that movie had a $175 million budget.
Sure.
And as of August 20th, it brought in $315 million.
And unlike the last two Spider-Man movies, it was watchable.
It was so much fun, and we were so happy that they brought that franchise back.
By the way, it's really, I think it's more than watchable. I thought it was really,
I loved
really
it.
Great.
It was
and
really
I think Tom
good.
Tom Holland's absolutely fantastic.
And, I thought, and how smart was it to introduce him at Civil War first?
So
how
smart.
That
so
was
smart.
Like.
And Civil War is such a great. It's one of my all-time favorite Marvel movies. I'm rewatching Civil War right now because when I work on the crossovers, I try to rewatch usually it's movies, but some TV shows like superhero stuff that like sort of inspires me. Like, okay, give me an example where the superhero genre was really, really, really well executed. I thought Civil War is definitely at the top of that list.
Definitely, yeah. I thought it was, and it was also that kind of thing where it wasn't a really good kept secret. Like they kind of knew, everyone kind of knew Spider-Man was going to be in it, but when that first trailer hit with Spider-Man in it,
good.
It was like oh my god, this is going to be great.
Yeah,
and sure enough, it was great. I think one of my favorite lines was, normally there's not this much talking when there's fighting going on.
Oh, yeah, and as we said, Michael Keaton was fantastic.
Yes.
Fantastic.
It was a great movie. And then Sony went, yeah, you know what? Why don't we continue this relationship? Yeah.
We do like money. As it turns out, we do.
Yeah. Turns out. That? Who knew? Who knew?
Yeah. So, also, Girls Trip is coming out.
I didn't get a chance to see that, but Tiffany Haddish.
It looked funny.
And, mm-hmm. and just to give you, so Tiffany Haddish, who's been on this show, is a very funny comic. Her career is blowing up. So that movie had a $19 million budget. It brought in over $100 million.
Right.
So that's just fantastic.
And a profit.
That's a little bit of a profit. And it shows you, like, that when Hollywood was like, I don't know, you know. It's the thing that Tyler Perry had to deal with. Oh, right. Black women don't go to movies.
Right,
no,
exactly.
They don't go to your movies.
Right.
they don't go to your movies.
Yeah, there's a difference.
And when you make one with a $19 million budget, that's not a big gamble. No.
And they marketed it. I mean, they put the – I think – I'm willing to bet that the marketing budget for that movie was double the production budget.
Oh, right.
Oh.
I wouldn't doubt it.
You know?
Yeah.
And even then, by the way, it would be a tiny marketing budget.
Right.
Even a double.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? But
I mean, you're looking at, like, for these tentpole movies, over $100 million just in marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You can see them being spent.
It's a very big expense.
The next is Batman versus Two-Face. Now, this is a DC animated movie. This is a sequel to Return of the Caped Crusader, where they actually went to the old 60s Batman. And Adam West actually did record this film before he passed away. So,
oh, wow.
So you can actually – I saw the first one. It was really fun and campy, and it's –
genius.
It's,
I just love that they're doing this.
It was, and I was glad that they're doing another one. Now, they do something really interesting here where they – the only way to get this movie is you have to buy it. Like, you can't rent it.
Oh,
like,
really?
Like, yeah. What they do is they – before you can stream it on Netflix and stuff, they have this window of where – you know, you're gonna have to pay for it. But it's worked for them. They're not going to change.
Yeah. Well, I have to say the DC animated movies, I think they're incredibly well done.
Yes.
The production value, the quality, the scripts, they're extremely well done.
Some of them are definitely, like, there's a couple hit or misses for sure, and one of the constraints is easily budget, because sometimes these stories deserve a little more time.
Sure.
But they're limited to that 70 to 80 minutes just barely a feature time.
Yeah.
Because animation is expensive.
Yes, it is.
But
yes,
like I remember when they did The Dark Knight, they actually broke that out into two.
Yep.
But like there was I think one of my favorites is still Under the Red Hood.
I think that was fantastic.
Great. That one.
I love that one. I do love the Dark Knight Returns adaptation. Mm-hmm. The year one adaptation's great.
That one's good, too.
I have very high hopes for Gotham by Gaslight.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Very, mm-hmm.
They're talking about a deep cut. They're going into the library for that one.
For me, that's not a deep cut, but I suppose for...
For the average viewer.
For the person who's not old is really what you're trying to say. For the person who's not old, it's a deep cut.
And, and we want to talk about for the site spotlight and the fan feedback. We really just wanted to thank you guys for coming out to LA Podfest and mention what a great time we had. It was a really good year. It was a recovery year for us. It's no secret. We've been saying that we got clobbered last year. And this year, you guys, everything was better. You guys showed up. Uh-huh. We had a great lineup. We had a new hotel. We had more sponsors. So everything went in the right direction this year.
Yeah, everything was good. Mm-hmm. We sold more tickets and, all that stuff. So it was a good thing. And all of you guys that came out to PodFest, it was fantastic. It's such a...
And your feedback was so good, too.
Yeah, the support and, it's such an amazing event. There's so much work that goes into it, and all of us every year are always like, "Oh God, this is so much," But then those 3 days are the most fun. Like, my voice is still a little hoarse.
I know, mine too.
Laughing all weekend and doing shows, and
even panels and workshops. We expanded that whole thing for the to podcast pros, and we got some great feedback. You guys really enjoyed those. What I loved is seeing that Venn diagram of like people wanting to learn about podcasting, people wanting to just see shows, mm-hmm. people wanting to use the lab. And then in that center was the people that did all three.
Yeah. And then all the podcasters, all the people that did their shows, the people who've returned the first time.
We couldn't do it without any of you guys,
yeah.
podcasters and podcast fans. So
the volunteers,
thank you.
The staff, like it was really, really
we want to
cool.
thank everybody.
So thank you guys.
So, all right. Well, premiering this week, The Snowman.
Here's my issue with this.
Please.
Talking about the trailers. Mm-hmm. Initially, I'm like, oh, this looks interesting. And then the trailer, it almost tells me the whole movie.
Right.
It looks really cool.
If you're, especially with a thriller / suspense movie, that's the one place you really don't want to show most of the movie.
I know. Mm. So that's it looks intriguing, but I don't know.
I like the posters.
They're cool posters.
Cool posters, yeah.
Posters are cool.
Michael Fassbender, I love, big fan of his, but, you know, this movie just looks,
I thought this was a sequel or a prequel to The Falcon and the Snowman, and I will say the trailer did clarify that for me.
They just showed me too much in the trailer. I was, like, on board with seeing it, and then I was like, well, I kind of feel like I know what's going down.
Pretty much. Yeah. You've seen the first three quarters of the film.
Yeah,
it's like it's a killer. Uses snowmen, can't catch him, toying with the police, and then I can go in and see the third act and know what's going on.
Yeah, all you had to do is killer using snowmen, stop. Right. There, the trailer's like, oh, what is this? How is he? This is crazy.
What's going on?
Stop, and then you
You don't have to show me the cops being frustrated. Yeah, I figured that's going
to
happen.
You don't have to show me the guy in the house. You don't have to show me the footsteps and all this other crap.
I tell you, the people who cut trailers, they really have a tough time with this show.
They really
do. Yes, they do.
Man.
Deservedly so.
They are hurting the marketing of movies.
And the next movie, Geostorm. Oh, my God. This movie looks so delightfully awful that I can't even begin to talk about it. But I will say this. The trailer clearly reflects the film. It's big, dumb, goofy, horrible dialogue, ridiculous cliches. And then my favorite part of a bad movie / trailer is that someone says the name in the trailer.
Right.
It's like, this looks like a geostorm.
That's always a surefire sign that it's a runaway hit.
Yes. We should join up together and form the Justice League.
It might be apocryphal, but I think in Harv Bennett's original draft of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, what became the Genesis device actually was a weather-controlled machine. So,
really?
Yes. Well, that was a MacGuffin he had back when he was producing the $6 Million Man movie. That's why I think the story's not quite apocryphal, because it seems to be something Harv Bennett liked to write about.
Right.
But I always think of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan when I think of Geostorm.
Ah.
Yes.
Which is hard to make that connection. But
there's the premise, by the way. There's
He tasks me.
And I shall have him. I will chase him around the moons of Nibia and around Antares Maelstrom and through Perdition's flames before I give him up.
Kind of like a poor marksman, you keep missing the target.
Love that movie. I love that movie.
I could
watch
that movie on a loop.
Yes. Yep, me too.
But I would like to see a $6 Million Man film. I
Me too.
Throw that out
well,
there.
You know what? I just read an interview with a guy named Bob Weinstein.
I thought you were going to say Lee Majors.
No. Bob Weinstein just gave an interview, I think, to The Hollywood Reporter saying, hey, I got $6 Billion Man with a B. And, you know, the Weinstein Company, they're on the ascent. They're getting a lot of press these days.
Yes,
you know,
they are
again, in a world where it's difficult to sort of break out of the clutter and sort of distinguish yourself and become a household name.
Yeah,
you know, I would say the Weinstein Company, they've done a very good job of getting themselves out there into the public consciousness.
No such thing as bad publicity.
Well, let's see. But anyway, he did name check the $6 Billion Man adjusted for inflation title in the movies he's developing. So
did he really?
He did. I love that franchise. I'm a huge.
That'd be
six
awesome.
Million, six yeah. million, $6 billion, $6 trillion man.
Yeah. Either way, he's an expensive man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Either way, not cheap.
Yeah.
Tyler Perry's Boo too.
We'll keep an eye on that company, see what they're up to.
See if there's any new developments.
Yes. Tyler Perry, Boo 2, A Madea Halloween. Now, clearly the first one did well enough to generate a sequel. Now, this is the Madea Extended Universe.
Tyler Perry has created his own...
His own studio empire, really.
He's doing whatever he wants. His movies all make money.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
He knows who he's marketing to. He's like... He figured it out. He cracked the code, man.
Yeah, and he's not going to change anytime soon.
No, why should he? He's got a proven thing that works. He's got an audience that loves it, and everything makes a profit.
Yeah, and they're reviewer proof.
And he's got complete control over everything that he does. Who wouldn't?
Right.
Why would he need to give up any of that?
Yeah, I'm actually quite jealous of him.
Yes,
I mean, it's very impressive.
Yeah.
Look what he's done. So,
And this, I'm sure this one will also be profitable.
Of course it will. Mm-hmm. Of course it will. All right. Well, that's our show, ladies and gentlemen.
It's pretty exciting.
Pretty exciting. Mark Guggenheim, anywhere people can find you or projects coming up.
What do you want to promote?
What do you
want to promote? This is the time. It's plug time.
I love plug time. Well, it's always like, I always do the podcast and I've got to be like, well, I don't know if I'll have a career tomorrow once it breaks.
What's the damage control?
Assuming I still have a career, let's see. Arrow season 6 just premiered last week. Mm-hmm. Second episode is on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. DC's Legends of Tomorrow we're recording this on Tuesday, and we're on Tuesday night, 9:00. Mm-hmm. Our second episode, Billy Zane plays P.T. Barnum.
Cool.
Definitely worth checking out. Troll Hunters season 2, you can expect an announcement so soon. Mm-hmm. And that way I don't have to be dodging all those when is season 2 coming questions that I get on other podcasts. Mm-hmm.
Troll Hunters podcast?
There should be more of them. and then X-Men Gold number 14, the third part of Mojo Worldwide, which is our X-Men Blue, X-Men Gold crossover, that drops tomorrow, Wednesday.
Nice.
Oh, that's great.
That's what's going on.
Mark Guggenheim, very busy. Thank
busy
you for
man.
Coming by
yeah.
with all of your busyness.
I appreciate it. It's always fun. It's always fun to play Russian roulette with my career.
Yeah. Well, we're happy you take the time to do so.
We really do. It's a lovely gun. Thank you so much to Aaron Brungard and everybody at the ATC Studios here in beautiful downtown Burbank, California. Scenic Burbank, I would call it.
Scenic Burbank, yes.
That's our show.
Right by the IKEA.
We will be doing...
this is a big announcement.
Big announcement. So we're going to be doing Comedy Film Nerds live at the All Things Comedy Festival Thursday, October 26th from 3 to 4:30 at the...
what's the name of the club,
ATC, what's it called?
It's going to be the ATC pop-up shop. It's across from Stand Up Live.
It's across from Stand Up Live.
Stand Up Live, which is in downtown Phoenix. It's a cool club I've played before. So if you're in the Phoenix area or want to come there, if the All Things Comedy Festival is that whole, like the 26th through the 29th.
So go to Stand Up Live and then turn around. That's where we'll be.
it's free to come by. There's a bar, everything. Come on.
Yeah, she's the cool little pop-up shows. And then, I'm going to... we'll probably be doing other shows that night. I'm there through Saturday.
We're supposed to get the schedule shortly.
Yeah. So there's other shows we're going to be doing. So if you're in Phoenix, come by the ATC Festival. It'll be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And there's a million comics will be there. So anybody in the Phoenix area.
It goes all the way to Sunday, right?
Yeah. Come on out. 26th through the 29th. Mm-hmm. All right. That's our show. My name's Graham Elwood.
And one thing I want to mention, too, is the new episode of Conversations from the Abyss has dropped.
Ooh.
And this is called The New House. Stars none other than Graham Elwood.
Great job.
And
thanks, man.
And Janet Varney from Thrilling Adventure Hour. And it is about a couple that is having some problems. And then they find out there's something very wrong with their new house. And when we recorded it, I had no idea that there was actual some issues going on with your relationship. And after the show, I was like, wow, Graham, that felt really genuine and really heartfelt.
Yeah, because it's happening right now. Yeah. I don't have a haunted basement. But
I will say this is the kind of thing, too. Like, you hear Graham and I joke around a lot on the shows. Graham actually has acting chops. And he does a really nice job on the episode, so you definitely want
I'm
to
rarely
listen to
afforded
it.
The opportunity yes. to do it, but I appreciate you, Chris, letting me take my years of Meisner training and actually putting it to use.
So it's Conversations from the Abyss, The New House, with Graham Elwood and Janet Varney. Both do a fantastic job, I will say. And it's only 15 minutes of your time.
Yeah. Oh, I also forgot the Political Vigilante live from PodFest. I dropped that on iTunes. You can listen to it. The video from it got damaged, so there's no video from it. So Political Vigilante is only available as an audio podcast. But there's really cool interviews with Ron Placone from Young Turks and Jimmy Dore and John Updike from openprimaries.org.
Sounds
great. All
right,
guys, that's all our business. Now I'm Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.